Welcome to the History Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Thomason. The History Podcast is an educational podcast intended to engage student and lifelong learning in American history. Without further delay, let's get to it. Welcome to the podcast. Nostalgia is often our greatest obstacle to studying history. This is no more evident than in what I like to call generational warfare, where the older generation thinks that the younger generation is the root of all evil and the moral fabric of the country is falling apart because of them. The older generation often reminisces about the good old days when things were so much better. Just as the ancients were wrong about a fall from the golden age, we too fall into this trap where stories from the past corrupt our understanding of the past and mislead us about the present. This happens frequently with the colonial era, which arguably happens more so in this period than any other period in American history. Our visualization of that period of time is bombarded with paintings of pilgrims we were shown over and over and over again as small children. Stories of Pocahontas's baptism, scenes of pilgrims marching through the woods going to church, and probably the biggest illusion of them all, the first Thanksgiving. Now, while some of these things did occur, it's only a small part of the story, and we tend to leave out the colonial scenes of drunken mischief and bar fights. Women in risque dresses, and gamblers, murderers, and other criminals. Roger Finke and Rodney Stark have spent a good portion of their adult lives researching, collecting, and analyzing actual data from the early years of our nation, and they have suggested that when you factor in children, the national religious adherence rate was 17% by the time we get to 1776. Adherence in this context simply means practicing the doctrine of their chosen denomination. This does not include every head that has ever gone through the doors of a religious center. Now, before we get started, I want to make an important note about this episode. The purpose of today's topic is to simply show which religious denominations thrived in colonial America, and to look at some of the reasons why they were able to grow their membership, and to identify the different regions where these denominations flourished in the early years. However, our purpose today is not to discuss the theologies of the different sects. Theology is very important in understanding religion. It's extremely important to understand not only religion, but the longevity of religion. And it's a very deep topic, and it's not appropriate for this particular podcast. So we won't be diving into that. Having said all of that, let's take a quick break, and then let's dive in. Let's first start by testing your knowledge on religion in colonial America. This ought to be fun. You ready? Okay, here we go. Based on the studies done by Finke and Stark, by 1776, can you guess which denomination had the most congregations in all of the colonies? If you guessed the Congregationalists, you would be correct. They had 668 congregations. If you guessed the Presbyterians, you were close. They were in second with 588. But here's the next question. Can you guess who came in third? If you guessed the Episcopalians, that's what we thought you would guess. But actually, the denomination that had the third most congregations by 1776 were the Baptists at 497, outnumbering the Episcopalians by just two. After that, you have the Quakers, who are way back at 310. All right, here's our next set of questions. Of the three colonial regions, which region do you believe had the highest adherence rate? So remember, you have New England, you have the middle colonies, and you have the southern colonies. So of these three colonial regions, which region do you believe had the highest adherence rate? Now, remember what we talked about with adherence. All right, this means devoted membership to that particular denomination, not just people who are walking through a door once in their life at a church. Okay, devoted membership. Which three, or which one of the three do you think had the highest adherence rate? I'll give you a second. If you guessed New England, you're correct. But closely behind were the middle colonies, with the southern colonies coming in last. The adherence rate in New England was 20%, while it was 19% in the middle colonies, and in the south, it was just 12%. All right, the last set of questions before we get into the different colonial regions. In 1776, which colony had the highest white adherence rate? If you guessed Massachusetts, that would be the obvious guess. And most of you would choose that one. But it's actually New Jersey at 26%. Massachusetts came in at 20%. So they're not too far behind, but New Jersey actually comes in with the highest white adherence rate as of 1776. All right, last question. Which state or colony at this time do you think had the lowest white adherence rate? I'll ask it one more time. Which colony do you think had the lowest white adherence rate? The answer is Vermont. Vermont comes in at 9%, and North Carolina comes in behind them, or just ahead of them, I guess is how you would say it, at 14%. So Vermont and North Carolina have the two lowest white adherence rates. All right, let's dive into the New England colonies on the other side of this break. When we juxtapose New England with the other two regions, New England did not have a lot of diversity. This was a very white portion of colonial America. In addition, there was no dominant denomination in the other two regions, whereas in New England, there was. This illuminates that New England was appropriately named because, like the mother country, it lacked diversity and it was dominated by a specific denomination. By 1776, Congregationalists made up 63% of all adherents in the region, with the Baptist and Episcopalians coming in well behind at 15% and 8% respectively. The 1790 census categorized 82% of the population of Massachusetts as English, compared to New York, where it was only 52%, and Pennsylvania, where it was only 35%. The interesting thing about the 1790 census is that when you add Protestant Irish and the Scots, the English population in Massachusetts goes up to 90%. However, many in the New England colonies saw the legal establishment of religion as the reason why there was so much apathy towards the Congregationalists, the Episcopalians, and the Presbyterians. In 1776, Adam Smith wrote that he believed the legal establishment of religion saps the clergy of their exertion, their zeal, and their industry. He goes on to add that when the clergy do not need to depend on their parishioners for their employment and pay, they neglect their duties and do not develop the skills required to stir up commitment. Colonel Lewis Morris, the former governor of New Jersey colony, wrote to a New York friend about the impact of establishment on the Episcopal Church by stating this: "If by force the salary is taken from the people and paid to the ministers of the church, It may be a means of subsisting those ministers, but they won't make many converts. Whereas without establishment in her favor, for in the Jerseys and Pennsylvania, where there is no act, there are four times the number of churchmen than there are in the province of New York. Now, whether or not he was accurate with those numbers, it still must be noted that the two most powerful denominations in colonial America, the Congregationalists and the Episcopalians, were established by legal means. The Episcopalians enjoyed legal establishment in places like New York, Virginia, Maryland, North and South Carolina, and also Georgia, where the Congregationalists were established in New England. Congregationalists did very well in the affluent areas where they could depend on taxpayer support. And in Massachusetts, Congregationalists made up 71% of all adherents. In Vermont, it was 65%. In Connecticut, it was 64%. And in Maine, it was 61%. Now, besides Rhode Island, where it was just 17%, and that's to be expected because of what we know about how Rhode Island was established, Congregationalists were not a real presence in any other American colonies besides those in New England. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll take a look at the middle colonies. As expected, the most Baptist colony in the middle colonies was Rhode Island. But even Rhode Island wasn't all that Baptist by 1776. Rhode Island only had a total adherence rate of 20%. And only half of that number made up the Baptist in Rhode Island. In other words, only about 1 in every 10 people in Rhode Island would have been Baptist. Pennsylvania is often known as the Quaker State because the colony was founded by Quaker William Penn, but by 1776, Quakers were only the third largest denomination in Pennsylvania, and quite frankly, it wasn't even close. The Presbyterians and the German Reformed denominations were the largest in the colony by this time. Ironically, you saw more Quakers in places like Delaware and North Carolina than you did in Pennsylvania. When you look at Maryland, which was founded by Lord Baltimore, it's easy to see why it was the largest Catholic colony by 1776. But even Maryland wasn't all that Catholic. Only about 3 in every 100 people were Catholic. When you look at the southern colonies, their numbers varied significantly because of slavery. In 1776, slaves make up 42% of the population in all the southern colonies, and they are included in the population denominators for which Finke and Stark's adherence rates are based on. In colonial America, very few slaves belong to a church. The Church of England held until well into the 19th century that blacks were not sufficiently human to be baptized, and several British colonies imposed heavy fines on Quakers for doing so. Other factors that contributed to barriers in the conversion of slaves was the formality of the Anglican worship styles. Anglican is another word for the Church of England. Okay, so again, we've used this word before in previous podcasts, but the Anglican Church is another way of saying the Church of England. The Anglican worship styles, the rigid organization structures, and requirements of extensive religious instruction were definitely contributing factors to the barriers of the conversion of slaves. For these reasons, when you compare the total adherence rate to the white adherence rate in the southern colonies, there is a much larger gap than that of the other two colonial regions. Let me give you an example. Maybe this will help clear it up. In Georgia, the total adherence rate is 7%. But when you look at the white adherence rate, it's 20%. In South Carolina, the total adherence rate is 14%. But the white adherence rate is 31%. Due to slavery, there was much more diversity in the South than in the New England colonies. But what may surprise some about this period is how religiously diverse the South was. While the Anglican Church, or as we mentioned earlier, the Church of England, had really taken a stronghold in the South in the early years of English colonization, and for obvious reasons, by the time we get to the end of the 18th century, the Baptists had already started to outgrow the Anglicans. In 1776, the Baptists make up 28% of all adherents in the southern colonies, with the Episcopalians coming in at 27.8%. Presbyterians came in close behind with 24.9%, but there were still eight other denominations represented that we know of in the South during this time. The talk of abolition, which actually is discussed before the inception of our nation, will begin to crank up by the turn of the 19th century. And by the early 1800s, we will begin to see slave Bibles produced and distributed to the slaves in the region. Sadly, these Bibles remove all scripture related to abolition or being brought out of slavery, or mentions of slave revolts. In fact, some books are completely removed. I'll give you a few examples. Genesis, the book of Genesis, has 50 chapters in it. But in the slave Bible, it only had 14. The book of Exodus has 40 chapters. But in the slave Bible, there were only 2. There were 34 books in the canon that were completely taken out, including the book of Numbers, the Psalms, and Ruth. And in the New Testament, there were books that were completely excluded, like Mark's account of the gospel, Philemon, which if you've never read Philemon, you need to, and you would understand why it was removed. 2nd and 3rd John, Jude, and Revelation. As we approach the American Revolution, one thing that is glaringly noticeable about religion in the colonies is how many people in the 13 colonies had nothing to do with religion of any kind, and at best, never publicly displayed their faith. These denominations were failing to attract people into their religious organizations, leaving many clergy concluding that the country was starving spiritually, that they were too worldly, too caught up in the desires of the flesh. Additionally, westward expansion will force these denominational leaders to strategize on how to mobilize their efforts in these new frontiers outside the original 13. Some will do better than others, while others will get left behind. In fact, some won't even attempt to expand into those new markets. In the mid and late 1700s, we will see a movement that will challenge the religious establishment of the colonies, historically known as the Great Awakening, which will be a topic for another day. But for now, we're out of time. See you next time. Thanks for listening to the History Podcast. We would like your feedback, good or bad, so that we can better serve our audience. If you have a question you would like for us to answer in a future podcast or have a topic request, leave that as well. If you haven't already subscribed to the History Podcast, go ahead and do that now so that you'll get notified when new episodes come out. You can find the History Podcast on any of your podcast streaming platforms. The History Podcast is an Anchor FM production.